bang. Bangly bang, bang, bangly bang, bangly. Bangly bang.
This is getting out of hand.
Someone's running.
It's a new catchphrase.
Bangly. It's just a man saying bangly bang 57 times in a row. Okay, oh, this is better. This is a sweet spot. Bangly bang on the Empire podcast this week. Alfonso Cuarón takes us to Roma, and who are we to say no? Plus the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that is excited to put the Christmas tree up this weekend. Get that cinnamon and clove candle on, heat up a mug of cocoa, and wait for my annual Christmas bonus to arrive from my big-hearted boss, Frank Shirley. I'm sure there's no way that guy will chip me with a discount subscription to a Jello of the Month club. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. I don't know about you, but I am getting into the Christmas spirit, and I'm joined by three elves of such lethal cunning who are also doing so. Geek Queen, Helen O'Hara, have you put a shirtless supernatural calendar on your Christmas wish list?
If it existed, I might, but it doesn't, so I haven't. Are you going to buy a swimming pool with your bonus?
I have arranged to have a swimming pool installed as part of my bonus, and if there's enough left over,
yeah,
I'm going to fly you all out of here for the opening ceremony.
Fantastic.
It's going to be good. We're also joined by, I mean, every time he deigns to join us, I'm excited because he is a megastar. He is the star of one of the biggest films of all time. It's not set at Christmas, but we can't hold that against him. I'm talking, of course, about Edmund from Jurassic World. Nick Dissimulian, how are you?
I hate to correct you.
Yeah, it is.
It is set at Christmas.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a Christmas movie,
oh,
man.
Yeah. It starts.
Wait a second. What?
Yeah.
It is. The opening is all snowy and stuff, and then they go off to a tropical
trees.
Place.
But there's literally Christmas trees.
It's toast Christmassy.
James, we need to go back in and redo our Christmas movies ranking because this changes everything.
I mean,
Die Hard,
it?
Forget about it.
I'm not saying Edmund is the true meaning of Christmas, but I'm not saying that.
You're the ghost of Christmas shit.
James Dyer is also here, which is nice, I guess.
Hi, Chris.
You all right?
Yeah. I'm just, you know, stunned with that gag. Go on.
Are you, it's not a gag. It's a.
It wasn't a gag,
it's
in fairness.
It's not a gag. It's What is it? It's a term of affection.
Yes.
Welcome to the Empire Podcast.
We're contractually obligated to note your presence.
Thanks. It is in. It's my rider. You have to acknowledge that I'm here.
You guys can see him too, then, yeah?
Afraid so.
Shame. All right. So, are you in the Christmas spirit? Or
Always.
Are you being grinchy?
I'm an evergreen festive spirit. All year round, I'm full of the joys of Christmas. I'm Father Christmas. You didn't know that, did you? It's true. Just when you least expect it, I come into your living room and steal your shit.
Well, I think your initials are FC, but they don't stand for Father Christmas, as far as I'm concerned.
You do leave lumps of coal around. At least I hope it's coal.
Yeah. I think of myself more of a Krampus than a Santa.
Yes, so does everyone else.
Yes, a Grumpus, if you will. I'm really excited. This is the weekend that my wife allows us to put the Christmas tree up. She won't. I want to put it up basically in like March, but she won't let me do it, so December 1st, Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. That's never before December. But, and controversially,
tell that to Regent Street, pal.
Cannot leave it up after New Year's Day. And I know not everyone agrees with this, but
no,
I just think there is nothing more depressing than Christmas decorations in January. It just makes me sad.
January 6th. January 6th, 12th night.
No, 12th night, none of that. Okay. It has to be on New Year's Day. Everything has to come down New Year's
Day. No, that's a nonsense.
I feel like people are starting Christmas early this year because we all need it desperately.
Problem is we can't afford it. And next year, even
true.
Less so.
But we can at least put up the tree we already have and the decorations we already have.
The communal tree, the tree that we all share.
The one tree.
Yeah.
You should actually make the most of it this year because apparently Europe are getting Santa in the divorce agreement, so...
Mm.
Well,
he won't be allowed to fly, will he?
No, absolutely not.
UK,
it's restricted airspace.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
He is European. So.
For ages in the queue at customs. Oh, man.
At least he gets a blue passport.
Yes, he does indeed.
Nick, are you... He'd have to show his income. He can't do that.
Is one of the reindeer called Brexit? I feel like it's one of the lesser reindeer.
Yes.
Definitely one of the lesser
Yeah,
ones.
There's Donner, Dasher, Cupid, Prancer, Rudolph, and Brexit.
That's what I thought. Confirmed.
Yeah.
What was the question?
I don't even know.
Okay.
Are you just excited about Christmas? But that's not the question.
I'm not really, although I have brought a festive tin of mini Twiglets, which has a
How did you come
robin.
By these?
I bought them in a shop.
Oh.
I like Twiglets.
That's quite traditional.
So there we go.
It's not difficult.
Well, no, I just wondered why, because it's just unusual to see a grown man walking the streets with an enormous tube of Twiglets. I just assumed someone had given them to him, or, he'd stolen them.
Nick loves his Twiglets.
I do love a Twiglet. Yeah, festive twigs.
Shall we have a question?
Sure.
An actual question. And this comes from an actual reader. And it is... Reader? I mean, what are they?
Listener. Human. Person.
Unless you
civilian.
Print out the podcast. Muggle. Read it. Yeah. This is from a muggle. It's from Will Hughes. At Will Hughes 87 on the Twitter machines. And he asks, what children's show would you like to see made into a film that hasn't already been? Ooh. My vote is Captain Scarlet, as long as it doesn't get thunderbirded. Not my words, the words of Will Hughes 87.
Huh.
John Craven's news round. No.
With the jumpers.
No, definitely. But really, like, it's all a big subterfuge, and secretly, like, he's a serial killer and he's going out, and that's kind of the plot of it. And he just puts on this sort of festive jumper, informative, educating the children face. But deep down, there's a dark passenger bubbling beneath the surface.
That was way too specific.
I haven't put a lot of thought into that.
Yeah, I suspect all your pitches are going to be like that.
You think?
Yeah. Cries for help. Yeah. Or confessions. One of the two. hang on. You know what John Craven's news round is, right?
Yeah, it was the thing you had to sit through before you could watch Neighbours.
Right. So how would that work itself into a plot, a movie plot?
I just laid it out for you. The whole thing. That was basically my elevator pitch.
So he's a he's a newsreader.
Yeah.
For children.
Yeah.
But he's also a serial killer.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see it now. All right. Okay.
He was the one who trashed the Blue Peter Garden. That's a spoiler from the third act.
I think all our references are going to be pretty dated, aren't they? Judging by this first one,
is John Craven still going?
Pretty sure he's dead.
No, he's alive.
I
googled him as you were.
He's alive
doing this.
And yet not caught.
Oh my god!
But he's not still reading out the news.
As your lawyer, I feel very strongly that we should make it clear that John Craven,
is not a serial killer. John Craven with a K.
John Craven. You've mixed him up with John Craven.
Craven the Hunter.
Oh, dear.
So, Wes. Yeah.
No.
I'm actually on board with this now.
Don't encourage it.
He's talked me around. But again, we have to stress that John Craven is not a serial killer.
I would have watched Wes Craven's John Craven.
Oh, yes.
That would have been good.
That would have been
John
amazing.
John Craven's new nightmare.
Wes Craven's news round.
This is extraordinary.
Anyway, I'm going to change the subject quickly.
Please.
Wombles.
Where?
Really?
The time is surely
name
right.
Name them all now, and I'll give you a fiver.
I will, because I've got them in front of me.
Let me see if I can... Orinoco.
So, yep.
Great Uncle Bulgaria.
Yep.
And the others.
And Bunga Bunga, which...
That's not a wombole.
No. That's a party in Italy.
Yeah, okay.
And let's not forget, of course, Brexit.
And Brexit. So I just feel like the time is ripe with today's technology to do a performance capture. You know, I'm not saying James Cameron should direct it, but probably should.
But not saying that.
Five wombole films... And just get really deep into the mythology.
Well, this could get quite dark as well, because according to Donald Trump, Wimbledon is a no-go zone.
Right. So Uncle Bulgaria turns out to be a serial killer.
Oh, God.
Could happen.
David Cronenberg's Wombles.
I would like to suggest... I was going to suggest Reboot when I first thought of it, because I think that's a massively underrated cartoon. That was incredible. 90s cartoon set inside a computer. It was amazing.
Does this get the sigh of the reboot?
No, because it rebooted itself halfway through the series and got even better.
Rebooted?
Rebooted.
And now you want to reboot the reboot reboot?
Yeah.
You're mad.
I know. I live on the edge. But actually...
Really?
Stories
How is
inside,
he these days?
He's great. Stories inside computers can be a bit shit, actually, I've decided. So I'm not going to suggest that in the end. I'm going to suggest Super Ted. And here's why.
Yes!
Because my little brother played the opening credits of Super Ted last night, and I'd forgotten how freaking insane they are.
Spotty.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Texas
so
Pete.
This is what gets it. So Super Ted is a teddy bear created in a toy factory. Yep. He's defective, so he's thrown in the crap toy room, basically.
That's what they say in the narration, the crap toy room.
Yes, where a spotty man, literally referred to as the spotty man, brings him to life, but then also brings him to Mother Nature, who lives on a magic cloud, who gives him superpowers. And then when he unzips his fur... skin.
Instead of seeing his sinew underneath.
Full on body horror.
He has his costume underneath that. So how does he get his skin back on?
Does he just keep taking things off?
Yeah, does he keep taking off a layer and then it's either skin, uniform, how does that work?
I may never sleep again after this conversation.
Sam Elliott as Texas Pete.
Well, I was going to say Jeffrey Dean Morgan, playing his character from Rampage.
The greatest
dialogue of the year still.
Amazing.
There's only like a month to go, but Jeffrey Dean Morgan's line in Rampage, when science shits the bed, I'm the guy who changes the sheets, which is the worst brag.
Yes.
It's like, why are you bragging about that? Anyway, but yeah, he should be Texas Pete. Just put on a Stetson and he's ready to go.
This is all coming together, I'm telling you. Super Ted the movie. It's going to be
amazing. I
have
a walking Ted. How about that?
It's good. With Negan. This works.
I'm very, very excited about that. Super Ted is amazing.
I would like to put in a shout for Rent-A-Ghost. I think that could...
They were going to do that.
Here's a hot fact for you. Hazel the Witch, and this may be apocryphal because I don't know how this information got into my head, so just bear that in mind. Held some kind of record for fastest touch typing, or it could have been shorthand, but it was something like that.
Dude, that was the least specific story in the world ever.
And it may not be true, because I don't know how I know it, or indeed if I do know it, or possibly dreamt it, but that is a fact. And there was Hazel the Witch, Dobbin the Horse, Mr. Claypole, and Mrs. Popoff. Do you remember Mrs. Popoff who sneezed and teleported? How am I the only one who saw Rent-A-Ghost?
Well, we're all going full Stuart McConey and we're going down nostalgia lane, who remembers Tony Hart? And his caretaker friend, Mr. Bennett. Mm-hmm. And we all know that his son is Tom Bennett.
Bennett!
Oh, dear.
No.
The actor Tom Bennett. Not the bad guy from... Not the bad guy from Commando.
Is that true?
That's very true.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, Tony Hart's son is the bad guy from Commando.
Yes.
Yes, that is entirely
that
true.
That's ultra true. It could not be any more true than that. Yes?
Yeah, I just want to mention one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
Animaniacs. I know it's getting a reboot already, but it's only a small screen one. I want it everywhere.
Performance
I want
Animaniacs.
Yeah, on the big screen, on the small screen, I don't care. I want a Pinky and the Brain spin-off movie. Mm-hmm. Yes, don't you at me, James.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen Animaniacs, and I don't know what it is.
Well then, don't
you idiot.
That's actually true.
It's one of the funniest and smartest cartoons ever made.
Is it though?
You come
in here with your truck in the...
You don't know what you're talking about.
It is great. I'm on Helen's side here. But I do feel like they would probably ruin it. They'd try and do one of those live action CG things and they'd be interacting with David Cross and Matthew Lillard and it would just be...
Oh, no, they wouldn't. Oh God, no. David Cross and Matthew Lillard would be nowhere near an Animaniacs movie.
David Cross and Matthew Lillard are fine actors.
Fine actors who would not be allowed anywhere near an Animaniacs movie.
Okay.
This is a show that made jokes about The Godfather, 2001, mm-hmm. Don Quixote, like you name it. They were making...
Guarantee they didn't say Don Quixote like that.
They probably did.
It's real good.
It was amazing.
Yeah, and you coming in here with your truculent opinions about things that you've never seen.
Yeah.
You have gone full Rees-Mogg. Never go full Rees-Mogg.
That's good advice.
We've gone political here on the Empire podcast. The Empire podcast. I'm going to mention two things very, very quickly before we've got to move on. A Banana Man.
Oh, yeah.
Every superhero is getting...
Eric eats a banana.
Oh, my God. So good.
Yeah, Banana Man's solid.
I think Banana Man is ripe for a movie. Lots of movies being based on comic book heroes. I don't know if you've noticed that. And also, I was going to say a kids show that was made in the last 5 years, Horrible Histories, but it is getting a movie. That's nice. And then finally, who remembers Rod Hull and Emu?
I was just about to say Pink Windmill.
Grotbags. Didn't you die recently?
Grotbags Origins. Who would you cast as Grotbags? If they announce like a $200 million big studio reimagining of the Pink Windmill.
Miriam Margolyes. Miriam Margolyes, without a shadow of a doubt.
No. Margolyes could not carry a $200 million tentpole.
Yes, she could.
No, she could.
She could.
I think Kate Blanchett could pull it off.
She's no grot bag.
Prosthetics.
Blanchett can do anything. And they have. And if you got Kate Blanchett with the budget, then you're good. It's all good. I would go Kate Blanchett. Or I would go Melissa McCarthy.
Okay.
Can't argue with that. All right, so that has answered, what's his name? Will Hughes' question to his satisfaction. If you want to have your question read out in the Empire podcast, then you can get in touch by a number of methods. Let me see, you can tweet us. We're on Twitter as @EmpireMagazine. Please use the hashtag Empire Podcast, or chances are we won't see it. We're on Facebook as well as Empire Magazine. And we're on email. You can email us at podcast@empireonline.com. Time now and then to talk about this week's big movie news. And the biggest movie news, the one that's on, the story that's on everyone's lips, is there's a new issue of Empire on sale in all good and evil news agents.
Woo-hoo!
And digitally as well. Love saying that word, digitally. So let's talk about it. Nick, tell me about this magazine. What's in the magazine? There's a lot of great stuff inside the issue.
What is not in this magazine?
That's an even better way of putting it.
I'll tell you what is in the magazine. James Cameron and lots of him. There is a...
It makes it sound like he's done a nude centerfold.
He has not
only
done
on
that.
The subscribers edition.
No, we the cover story is Alita: Battle Angel, which is the movie directed by Robert Rodriguez, but has been shepherded by James Cameron for the last 20 years. He's been trying to, he hoped to direct it himself, handed it over to Robert Rodriguez. So that's an interesting story, I think. James Cameron has written us an amazing essay.
That's nice of him.
This is kind of kicking
off My Summer Holidays by James Cameron.
Yeah, so this is kind of kicking off our 30th birthday celebrations. So
yeah, we haven't really talked about this, have we? No. Empire's about to turn 30.
Indeed.
Yeah, next year.
Yeah,
that's true. So we're starting our birthday celebrations now because the Queen gets two birthdays, so we might as well get 13.
Yeah.
Because we're better than that many times better than the Queen. Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
So over the next year, we're going to be celebrating lots of amazing directors, 30 of them, in fact.
And first up is James Cameron.
Indeed.
Very excited. And you went to LA, you hung out with Jimbo? The good Jimbo, not this one.
Yep, the good one. I was pretty fortunate. I got to go to his house, which is not a giant airlock or a giant sort of deep sea submersible, but it's an actual house. But yeah, that was pretty cool. I got to go and fire reader's questions at him next to a swimming pool, and he was good fun. not literally.
Was he in the swimming pool?
No, we were next to the swimming pool.
Okay.
That's what I said, isn't it?
Come on.
You were in the hot tub together.
I should specify we were not in a hot tub.
You were pool adjacent.
We both had our clothes on, and it was all good, wholesome fun. But he was great. He was a lot of fun. So he wrote us a piece as well as that.
And I also talked to somebody for the magazine that I was totally cool about. It was totally calm, totally cool. Wasn't excited at all. I was cool. I interviewed Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Linny Manny himself. Yes. Amazing.
Yes, obviously for Mary Poppins Returns. And,
but really for Hamilton.
But mostly for Hamilton. Yeah. I might have possibly, I honestly, my professionalism was tested. I might have brought my Hamiltome and got it signed. I admit nothing.
You're not going to throw away your shot.
I'm not going to throw away my shot.
And you're not going to want to throw away this issue.
Oh!
Because there's more stuff in it to come.
Oh,
think of the segues. As luck would have it, I have an issue here. Look at this. This is incredible. So this is a really great issue, I would say. So we got the James Cameron stuff. We got the Alita: Battle Angel stuff. We have a feature on the front runner, which is the Oscar favorite. And then we have a feature on the favorite, which is the Oscar front runner. And Helen Manuel Miranda spoke to, that's your now official, I think you changed your name.
Yeah, obviously.
At what point did you drop all pretense of being even remotely interested in Mary Poppins Returns and just talk to him about Hamilton?
I was totally professional. My brief from my features editor, Nick.
Hello.
Hello, was to go through his entire career and not just Hamilton. And damn it, I did that. I talked about The Sopranos, I talked about Sex and the City, which you may not have known he was in those, but he was. We went through the whole thing, and he was a delight.
Amazing.
It's probably good.
Amazing. Very jealous. But then again, you saw him first. we've got lots of other great stuff outside the issue. We've got a first look at the new Hellboy, the story about behind Once Upon a Deadpool, Eric Idle's Pint of Milk. In my section, there's loads of great stuff, review, including an oral history of the bathroom fight from Mission Impossible Fallout. And there is a 22-page tribute to Stan Lee, who obviously passed away very, very recently, and we were very, very close to going to press on the magazine, but Stan Lee is such a huge figure for us that we pulled out all the stops and came up with this 22-page tribute. I wrote a couple of pieces in there. Kenneth Branagh wrote a piece for us in that as well on what Stan Lee means to him. We reprint my podcast interview with him from Comic-Con 2017. It is now in print. And yes, comic book is printed as two words in the magazine. Even though Stan said it was going to be one word, but, you know, house style wins. Sorry, Stan.
I love that interview because there's some very detailed discussion of punctuation and hyphens. I love that stuff. So,
and you are Grammar Man.
I'm Grammar Man. That is my superhero persona.
It's very exciting. It's a really, really great issue. It's on sale right now. Go and pick it up. Pair of wages, you mothers.
That's not really a very nice thing way to put it.
All right, okay. Chris gots to eat. Gods to eat.
I've got some Twiglets.
Give me a Twiglet. I hate Twiglets, but give me a Twiglet. In the meantime, someone else talk about some movie news.
Oh, my God.
This is not podcast appropriate.
This is a sort of wasted moment that would make Bruno Mars just go nuts. What was his name? Bruno Mars? Roman Mars? Whatever his name is. Anyway, he'd go nuts about that. Let's start with the fact that we have a new Dracula. How about that?
A new what now?
Dracula. He's back. Dracula is back.
Dracula is back.
He's fangier than ever.
There aren't many names that are better than Count Dracula, but this guy who's now playing Dracula has got a better name.
Yes,
and his name is. Tell us his name, Nick.
Pronounce his name, Nick.
You pronounce his name, Nick.
Clash Bang?
Wallop. What a video.
Did I get that right?
It's not spelled that way, but I believe it might be pronounced Crash Bang.
I don't think it is.
I have no evidence to support this assertion, but well, I like to believe.
It's a genuinely good name,
I think it's Kles Bang.
It's just like a certificate saying Clash Bang.
Oh, God. But it might be Clash Bang. I don't know. I've never actually met him, and I haven't seen any TV shows where he's been introduced. So
this is the BBC Dracula series from Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss. So this is, you know, they've reinvented Sherlock Holmes. Now it's the turn of the other turn of the 20th century icon.
Will Dracula have a mind castle?
I assume so, yeah. So it'll be set in Transylvania in 1897, where the Count is plotting against denizens of Victorian London. Is that how we put it here? I know. Mr. Bang says, I'm thrilled to be taking on the role of Dracula, especially when the script is in the hands of the incredible talents of Stephen Moffat, Mark Gatiss, and the team responsible for Sherlock. Yes, he's evil, but there's so much more to him. This is him talking about Dracula, not Gatiss or Moffat. He's charismatic, intelligent, witty, and sexy. I realise that there's a lot to live up to with all the amazing people that have played him over the years, but I feel so privileged.
Let's list those amazing people, shall we? Christopher Lee.
Amazing.
Bela Lugosi.
What a god.
Jack Palance.
Yep.
George Hamilton.
Oh.
Jerry Butler. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Wow.
This is garlic!
Now I want to see him do a cooking show.
Just introducing every ingredient by yelling it at the camera.
This is oregano!
I'd watch it. I'd watch the hell out of that. But no, you've got to be excited about this because obviously Sherlock was a phenomenon. I think they've done very interesting things with Sherlock. I don't love everything about Sherlock, but there's no kind of arguing that they turn that into a phenomenon. So I think they're going to do some interesting things with Dracula. I don't think this is going to be a traditional retelling. I think they're going to throw some stuff at it and do some interesting visual things.
But Will.
What
is it, Griff? What is about to happen? I'm just saying, will Crash Bang, who I'm sure will be very, very good in the role, be able to hold a candle to the best Dracula of all? I do, of course, refer to Richard Roxburgh. I am...
I'll be honest, that was not the direction I thought you were going to go into.
What do you think I was going to do?
I thought you were going to do one of those things you do where you just crowbar a terrible joke in. Just for the sake of it. I thought you were going to do something along the lines. I thought you were going to say something like, yes, it all sounds great, but how are they going to raise the stakes? Or something like that. But no, you went
like in a kind of like a David Crusoe way, and then slow my sunglasses and go, wow! That sort of thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Hells Bells, what, are you excited about this? Old Crash Bang?
Yeah, I am. I'm optimistic for it. I'm like Nick, I'm a bit mixed on Sherlock in the end. I thought, you know, season one, pretty consistently good. Every subsequent season, up and down at best.
Oh,
so
player hater.
That's not player hating.
I mean,
that was like balanced commentary.
It's mild aspersion hating. So, I don't know.
So,
Why do you hate the Sherlock so much?
Why do you hate Sherlock?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
All right. But I'm excited about this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, three part, and I'm presuming there'll be more episodes to come. But three episodes initially on the BBC and Netflix. And it'll be out, I presume, next year.
What?
Very exciting.
Hey, speaking of many parts to a story, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is coming out on the 12th of December, although there are going to be some previews before then. I think if you go and see it next week, there's one night when it's in cinemas just for Medi Cinema, so you can go and see it and contribute to a good cause. It's phenomenal. It's absolutely freaking incredible. I don't want to like get ahead of the review or anything, but I absolutely loved it. So it's straight in the high part of my films of the year.
Wow.
It's an amazing film.
And you've seen six films this year. So.
I have seen six, and it's like it's in the top five of those. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, it's currently sitting at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's coming out soon. It's going to be big, I think.
I cannot wait to see it.
And Spider Tomatoes.
They have announced not just a sequel, but apparently also a Spider-Girls spin-off. So this is, I think, very, very good news. Because
is that what it's officially called, Spider-Girls?
No.
That's interesting.
It's not what it's
I'm
called.
Excited. I kind of wish it was Spider-Pigs spin-off, but I will accept this.
Spider-Ham is wonderful. Spider-Man Noir is wonderful. There are many, many Spider-Mans. And I keep singing the song from Kimmy Schmidt every time I think about this film, but in a good way. So yeah, no real details about this yet. Avatar The Last Airbender veteran Joaquin Dos Santos is apparently going to direct the sequel. they haven't obviously told us anything about what that will be, given that people haven't even seen the first one yet. Mm-hmm. And then the spin-off is even more sort of up in the air, but it's apparently a female character-focused story, probably about Hayley Steinfeld's voiced Spider-Gwen. Mm-hmm. So we shall see.
This is exciting. I haven't seen this yet, but I'm very much looking forward to it.
It is, yeah, it's pretty special. It really is pretty special. I can't wait for you all to see it. It's going to be awesome.
Cannot wait. And we're hopefully going to be doing a spoiler special for that as well. And while I have you, and while we're talking about spoiler specials and whatnot and all sorts of stuff, I should mention there's a ton of content coming your way over the, and some of it's already here, some of it is coming over the next couple of days and indeed next couple of weeks. So very quickly, I'll try and run it through as quickly as I can. Fantastic Beasts: The Crimes of Grindelwald spoiler special is up right now with producer David Heyman and director David Yates. That is there for you to listen to. James and I debated the age-old question, is Die Hard a Christmas movie, on a very special podcast with Sky Cinema's Alex Sane and Absolute Radio's Dave Berry. That is also up for you to listen to right now. Finally, some Egypt got round to editing the Arnold Schwarzenegger ranking episode.
That do it, do it now!
I did it then!
Get to the editing software!
That's up right now. The Kurt Russell interview special is up right now, or will be by the time you listen to this, as indeed with the Taika Waititi interview special. And then over the next couple of weeks, we have spoiler specials for Creed 2,
ooh,
Aquaman,
ooh,
possibly Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, oy, and Bumblebee,
ooh,
all coming your way.
What?
And we have to record all of those guys, oh, before we quit for Christmas.
Plus, also, God, a review of the year at some point.
A review of the year.
Yes, yeah. I know.
You don't need sleep or food or air.
Evidently not.
Podcast shall sustain you. So this isn't really a segue, because I'm segueing from something Helen said about 10 minutes ago.
But, sure, do it.
But hey, let's do it anyway.
Yeah.
Netflix have announced they will be launching a kind of Roald Dahl universe of, ooh, animated stories, which I am really excited about. Like, Roald Dahl was my favourite writer when I was a kid.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I used to love everything he did, apart from maybe Charlie in the Glass Elevator, which scared the shit out of
me. It's really disturbing.
Like, it really, all the creepy worms who link together. They probably will get around to that, so I'm quite worried about it. But they're doing The Twits, BFG, Matilda, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So yeah, I'm super excited about this, because I love Roald Dahl. I'm not sure live action is necessarily the right format for his stories that are so kind of outlandish and weird. So I'm really excited to see animated versions.
Yeah, I wonder if animation-wise they can keep some of that
Quentin
Blake kind of feel.
I think they will.
I hope
my
so.
Feeling is they will keep to the kind of weird. I want to see George's Marvelous Medicine, because that's another really freaking intense,
yeah,
crazy story, and I've not seen a version of that, so
that'd be pretty cool.
I'm excited.
I wonder what this means for live action adaptations going forward, as you said, but also Paul King had been announced to direct, or had been in talks to direct, a Willy Wonka prequel. So I don't know if that's going to go ahead, because this week he attached himself to another film called Time's Fool, which is based on a long poem by Glynn Maxwell. It sounds pretty cool. It's a pretty cool premise. I haven't read it yet, but it's about a man who is doomed to spend eternity on a train. But every 7 years, it stops at his hometown, and that gives him the chance to maybe end his torment. So it sounds, ooh, quite up Paul King Street. However, I would say it's not Paddington 3, so what the fuck?
Yeah, seriously, like, just drop it and do something else. It sounds a little bit like The Homeward Bounders by Diana Wynne Jones. If anyone hasn't read that, I recommend
haven't.
It. And if you have, I recommend reading it again, because it's great.
She did Howl's Moving Castle?
She did Howl's Moving Castle. Yeah, she's a phenomenal writer, so anything of hers that you see. It's kids' books, but really, really phenomenal
ones. Sounds a bit like the Metropolitan line as well. this week,
Can I just give a quick shout to Steven Spielberg is making a new version of West Side Story.
Yep.
And some casting has been announced. Rita Moreno, who of course won Best Supporting Actress for the original film, has been cast in a new role, I believe. So that is exciting, because she is an absolute goddess and a legend. And yes, never in my wildest dreams did I see myself revisiting this, she says. And to be asked by Steven Spielberg.
You can really do her voice as well. You just nailed it so perfectly.
Yeah, so well.
That was so good. Yeah, this is exciting. I wonder if she is, of course, an EGOT.
She is.
And this movie might give her the chance to become an EGOTY.
EGOT.
Which is Emmy,
Grammy,
Oscar, Tony, Empire Award.
And you star in the film Goatee.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Okay. John Travolta is goatee. But yeah, that's very, very exciting news. And she is a legend. And only the second person cast that movie so far alongside Ansel Elgort as Tony. So exciting times ahead. And there was some really sad news this week. A lot of really important people in the world of film passed away this week. We lost Nicholas Rogue at the age of 90. We lost a great Ricky Jay, great character actor and sleight of hand magician. If you have any time spare over the next few days, just Google some of Ricky Jay's tricks on YouTube. The man was a legend. Bernardo Bertolucci died at the age of 77 as well, the great Italian director. And Gloria Katz passed away today as well, the age of 76. And Gloria Katz was a screenwriter with her husband, Willard Hike, and they co-wrote American Graffiti with George Lucas. They were uncredited polishers on Star Wars as well, and they received an Oscar nomination for American Graffiti. And Samuel Hadida, who was a French producer behind movies like the Resident Evil franchise and the Silent Hill movies, he also passed away at the age of 64. So we lost some titans there, Helen.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nicholas Rogue is, just to pick up him out in particular, there was such an outswelling of love and affection for him on Twitter and people recommending deep cuts of his work that go far beyond the ones that we know. Which is wonderful. So I've literally got a to-do list now as a result of
Is
that.
Eureka on your to-do list?
It is, actually.
Is it?
Yes.
It's a great film.
You know, but obviously, you know, remembered for things like Don't Look Now and just phenomenal,
performance
phenomenal
work. And Walkabout. And
oh, just an incredible director and such an eye, obviously, as a cinematographer as well. And he came along to one of the Empire events, if you remember, a few years ago.
He
was a wonderful, wonderful storyteller as well.
We had the privilege, I think all of us had the privilege, actually, of watching Kim Newman interview him before or after, I can't remember, a screening of Don't Look Now. And that was just incredible.
That happened straight after a Real Steel presentation. It's a bit of a change of pace there. But yeah, he was fantastic. Don't Look Now is my favourite. I think probably a lot of people's favourites. But I mean, he was amazing. Performance is a complete trip of a film. I recommend his book, The World is Ever Changing, which he wrote, I think, about 5 years ago. There's a really good enhanced Kindle edition of it with lots of extra photos. And
Is it a memoir?
And this and that. Kind of, yeah. It's like part memoir, part... He has poems in there, like some of his favourite poems, some letters and stuff. It's it's a bit sort of more esoteric than a straightforward memoir, but it's really, really good if you like his work.
Incredibly influential filmmaker. Whenever he died, so many people were just paying tribute to him on Twitter. And Duncan Jones, did you see this Duncan Jones tweet? Duncan Jones shared a lovely picture of Duncan Jones as a kid on the set of The Man Who Fell to Earth with Nick Rogue and with, obviously, Duncan Jones' dad, David Bowie.
Yeah.
That's just a lovely little thing. But Chris Nolan worshipped him. He's one of Chris Nolan's idols.
You can see a real influence on Nolan's work. Mm. Nicholas Rogue did such interesting things with editing and with...
Fractured timelines,
jumping around in time and just really kind of elliptical use of chronology and stuff. So you can see that all the way through Nolan's work, I think.
But I also want to give a shout out once again to Ricky Jay, who was just one of those incredible... character actors that you will remember in films. So, you know, we call them the 27%ers. That's our shorthand at Empire. They improve any movie they're in by 27%. He was an amazing magician, amazing sleight of hand guy, but he had such a lugubrious face and voice that he was just ripe for the big screen as well. And David Mamet in particular used him brilliantly in a lot of movies. He's fantastic in the likes of Heist and House of Games, but he's really, really great in that. You remember him, of course, as Gupta in Tomorrow Never Dies. I found out this week that he had a card trick cut from that movie, which is in context it wouldn't have, you know, because suddenly this guy is throwing cards at things, because one of his tricks was he would throw cards at a watermelon and it would pierce the skin of a watermelon.
There's an amazing reaction shot in Boogie Nights. I just rewatched Boogie Nights last
week.
He's great
in Boogie Nights,
and there was an amazing shot that just struck me this time of the first sex scene with Dirk Diggler, where he kind of, you know, reveals his the true extent of his majesty. And it cuts to Ricky Jay, who's the camera guy, and he just, like, takes his eye away from the camera and has this amazing expression on his face. It's really funny. But, yeah, he was great. He always enhanced whatever he was in.
Yeah, a sad week in cinema.
A very sad week in cinema, indeed. Time now for this week's guest. Alfonso Cuarón is one of the three amigos, along with Alejandro González Iñárritu and Guillermo del Toro. Like my pronunciations, Helen?
Muy bien.
Getting better?
Sí, sí.
Getting better? My French is perfect. He is an amazing director, very, very versatile. Y Tu Mama Tambien, Gravity, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Children of Men. Whenever he makes a movie, doesn't make them very often, but whenever he makes them, he comes to play. And he certainly has with Roma, which is a semi-autobiographical tale about growing up in Mexico City. The movie is a Netflix film. It will be on Netflix as of next week. We will be reviewing it in next week's show, but it is out this week in limited release. I'm thinking Curzon Cinemas and maybe other cinemas around the country. So keep an eye out on the schedules for that, and you may get to see Roma on the big screen. But in the meantime, Ian Freer went along to interview him recently in a London hotel room, and it is a lot of fun, this interview. I was in the room twiddling the knobs and pressing the buttons, and yeah. I enjoyed it. I should probably rephrase that. But anyway, I'm not going to. I'm happy with that. Here we are, Ian Freer talking to Alfonso Cuarón. Enjoy.
Alfonso Cuarón, welcome to the Empire Podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me here.
You're very welcome. We're here to talk about Roma, which is a film you've kind of ripped from your own life. It's quite interesting that a lot of filmmakers make their autobiographical films at the start of their careers. You think of Fellini and Truffaut and George Lucas. You've taken a little bit of time to get to that. Why do you think? Were you kind of scared of going back to the past, you think?
Yeah, I guess so. Also, I'm a late bloomer, probably. They got it right immediately. No, but Fellini, if you refer to Amacore, that he did that in the 70s.
Yeah, quite late.
In the 70s.
Vitelloni's quite, that's an early one of his, isn't it? Yeah. And how was it going back to those kind of experiences? It's an intense kind of thing to do, to revisit. It's Mexico in the early 70s, isn't it? So you would have been about, what, 7, 8 years old?
I was 10.
10, okay. 10.
Yeah, it was a very strange experience. First of all, because going back to Mexico City, looking for places that I have written and described very, very, with great detail, but based upon my memory of those places, and confronted with those places now. So it was always the clash between what it was there and it is not anymore.
Yeah.
But also I was looking for these places in the with a crew of Mexican people that live there, and for whom these places are the present.
Yeah.
So for them... Those places were the embodiment of the present. And for me, those places were the embodiment of what it was not anymore.
Right.
Well, you know, so it was a strange experience, that whole thing.
Yeah.
And doing the film later on, because I was doing the prep, I was at the beginning so focused in the detail and making sure that things were, you know, the way they were supposed to be, that it took me a while to realize what I was doing. And then I realized it was intense.
But one of the granular details I'd like to ask you about was there's a shot where the camera moves through the house and it passes a poster for the Mexico World Cup in 1970.
Yep.
Was that a big thing for you?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
How did Mexico do in that World Cup? I can't remember.
It did, like always, quarters. The usual. It's very exciting.
England went there as champions.
England. England did. And they went to the next quarters. Is the next semi.
Semi.
England went semi, and who beat them was Brazil, I think, and that was the World Cup right after Bobby Moore.
Yeah. So you have vivid memories of that World Cup?
I have vivid memories because, you know, I was 10. It was Mexico. It was the World Cup in Mexico. So, you know, everybody was talking about, and I would go to some of the games. So it was exciting.
Yeah. And what about, another detail is that there's a lot of kind of imagery of planes in the film.
Yeah.
What was your thought about that? How did that come about?
Well, in one hand, is the transient thing of nature of things, you know, things that are just passing. A whole other universe that is of unseen people or unknown people that they are just passing and they have their own existence.
Yeah.
In the other hand, is also like an observation of how, in this context of life, in which you have, yes, you have love and you have solidarity, but you also have poverty and misery and pain and injustice. And nevertheless, there is this goal of this modernism, this longing of this modern, of this modernism,
yeah,
that is all these planes and all these cars, they coexist with these shanty towns.
Yeah.
You know, in the same world that we live.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's that contrast of...
Well, it's that contrast and that almost absurdity of things. I mean, as absurd of seeing a piece of metal flying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lovely scene where the kids go to see Marooned.
Yes.
Now, I think Marooned is kind of a shit version of Gravity. Is that fair?
That is fair? Very, very, very unfair thing to say, because actually Gravity is an homage to Maroon in many ways.
Okay. For people who haven't seen Marooned, can you explain what Marooned is?
Marooned is a film, I think it's from 1968,
yeah,
with Gene Hackman and James Franciscus,
yeah,
in which there is a group of astronauts that get stranded in space.
Yeah.
And it's the whole mission of trying to bring them back. And actually was done in a very... it's one of the only space films that they take space exploration seriously.
Yeah.
You know, it was very well researched.
Okay.
The special effects for the time were
really damn
good.
Yeah.
And the whole... They didn't make it as a science fiction film, but as a realistic film. And the thing is that a couple of years later, after it was released, there was Apollo 13.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, there was always the reference, you know, like Maroon foreshadowed what was going to happen with Apollo 13. Anyway, it's a film that really, when I was a kid, and I describe the moment of going to see that film, it was a film that was that impressed me very much.
Right.
But also impressed me something that I think came up later in Gravity, that is this idea of floating in a void, and that the only possibility of salvation is human contact.
Yeah.
And that was obvious in Gravity, because it's very literally about that.
Yeah.
But in this film, at the end, is about that. It's about how in this absurdity of life, in this, well, a life that doesn't really have much meaning.
Yeah, so Rome is like this, you say.
Rome is like that. This is a life that really doesn't have this meaning, and everything is so transient, and there's amazing stuff and very bad stuff happening in life.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes sense and gives a meaning to life is our bonds of affection.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the only thing that carries on.
Yeah. Forgive me being so harsh about Marooned.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it. You were praising Gravity, and I'm glad about that. But I really like Maroon. I saw it recently.
You are right. The visual effects are, for the time, they're great.
And Hackman is fantastic, and Franciscus is great, and it's Peter Jensen there, and it's Gregory Peck, who's Mission Control. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. People watch Maroon this weekend.
Usually don't like it. Why you don't like it?
I don't know. I just remember it being really bad. I haven't seen it for a while. Maybe I should revisit it.
Yeah, revisit it. You like it.
You talked about how this film is kind of 90% ripped from your own memories.
Yep.
There's a scene where a guy is doing naked kung fu in front of his girlfriend, Cleo.
Yeah.
I guess that's in the 10%. Of the things that you've made up. Is that fair, or have you done that?
That's the 10% that will apply. No, the thing is this, it's about memory, but also you can only approach memory from the standpoint of the present. So I didn't want to make a nostalgic film about going back into the past that I remember.
Yeah,
I wanted to do a film about the past from the standpoint of my understanding today.
Yeah.
And that's the reason in which both themes, the personal wounds and the social wounds, they interconnect.
Yeah.
And that was also the space in which, from the standpoint of the present, I could play with themes and symbolic elements that I thought they were pertinent.
Right. Also, I guess that black and white helps you not to be nostalgic, to have that kind of golden light that a lot of nostalgic films have.
That for sure, but also it's a black and white that is not nostalgic because it's a modern black and white.
Yeah.
It's embracing digital. It's not trying. I know that there's a whole school about trying to disguise the digital and making it look more, quote unquote, filmic. Oh. I wanted to embrace a contemporary black and white, 65 mil, completely pristine, no grain.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But as if I'm looking at the past, so-called black and white, but from the standpoint of the present.
Yeah.
And this is our present technology.
Yeah, and you were the DP.
I was reluctantly, yes.
Reluctantly because Chivo, your regular DP, was busy? Is that fair?
No, well, is that because of the process? I kept on extending the days of shoot and the days of preparation, and then it became unfeasible for Chivo to do it.
Right.
But that, and he had to, and this was like 2.5 weeks before we start shooting, so it was a moment of making a big decision, and Chivo... Is the Chivo who suggested, you know what, you should do it.
But am I right in thinking that you kind of started as a boom operator?
More than a dozen films as a boom operator.
Right. So is there any job on a set you can't do? How's your catering?
That is the best one, actually. No. I've done a lot of different positions. That doesn't mean I was great doing the different positions.
Right.
But I learned the craft of the different positions.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And was it, how important, thinking about that this is a very kind of intimate personal film, how important was something like Great Expectations in teaching you about what you wanted to do and what you didn't want to do?
Great Expectations for me was fundamental because sometimes the process of learning is precisely learning what you should not do.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that is not doing things for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
But in many ways, I guess it's organic with the theme of the film, because in Great Expectations is about a character who's doing everything for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
But that I learned, and it was painful. It was painful because you can never be satisfied if you do things for the wrong reasons.
Right. And so did you have doubts when Harry Potter came along? So I think, didn't Guillermo del Toro tell you, he called you, what's the word? Is it a flacco?
Flacco is skinny guy.
What does that mean, a skinny guy? So yeah. Tell me that story. How did he get you to do it?
With the cursing words or without the cursing words?
The cursing words are good.
It's Guillermo, then there would be a lot of cursing.
But we're good with that.
Okay. So yeah, it was after Y Tu Mamá También, you know, we're like always on the phone talking and chatting and discussing about projects. And I said, and what they have, they offered you anything? And I said, yeah. And I started making fun of Harry Potter. They offered me Harry Potter. I haven't seen the films, read the books. And I just got kind of like annoying about, yes, can you imagine Harry Potter? I know it's about 3 kids, 2 boys and a girl. It's like just they soy tu mamá también. And I think that everything is like that and stuff. And then he stopped me and said, wait, they offer you Harry Potter? And says, yeah. And why? And so you're going to say yes? I says, no, Guillermo, I'm not going to do Harry Potter. And he says, but have you read the books? And I said, no, I haven't read the books. And he says, you're a fucking arrogant bastard. You go right now, buy the books, read them, and call me back. And I was halfway through the third book, then I call him back and says, okay, Guillermo, I was wrong. You're right. Because I discovered, I was really blown away by the books. You know, it was, it was such an amazing universe, but also a universe that was referring to ourselves and to the world.
Yeah.
You know, it was not only an out of their fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, it's about people, about dynamics, about families, about societies. You know, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, and that's been your key concern, hasn't it, throughout the whole of your career? That's run through it, hasn't it? That interest in society, how the human in society and the society in the human, that kind of thing.
Well, we're one and the same, no?
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I could go into deeper concerns, you know, and more metaphysical concerns. Probably Rome is the closest to that, in the sense that it's more about maybe I don't know how to put Roma in a nutshell because it's about existence at the end.
Yeah.
But it's not with, you know, the metaphysical brilliance that Ingmar Bergman would have when, you know, making a film about insulated people in an island.
Yeah. But just some of the there's a shot where Cleo's walking and in the deep background there's a human cannonball being fired.
Yes.
How do you do that stuff? How do you think about how the deep background, the choreography of that is amazing.
I have an amazing group of people. I mean, what is amazing also is that we needed to reconstruct this shantytown the way that was in the 1970s, the real place of the 1970s. Now it's a city, it's a developed area. So we have to shoot in some other place. And Eugenio Caballero, the production designer, had to do a whole big design. I mean, all the water, all the puddles, all the little bridges in which people walk on top of the thing. And part of the whole thing was the Cannonball Man. And actually, that was so much fun to see this guy doing it over and over and over.
How many times
did
you get him to do it?
He did like a good 20 times.
Oh, man.
I know, but it was so much fun to watch it. It was so much fun to see it, man. It's like...
What about there's a scene where in a furniture shop that turns into a riot?
Yes. That's,
again, how do you think through that? It's such a complicated piece of filmic choreography. How did you plan through that?
Well, that requires a lot of planification. I mean, for once, because we were shooting in the place where the events took place.
Yeah.
And we reconstructed a furniture shop where that furniture shop used to exist, that now is a gym.
Yeah.
So we have to get rid of the gym and put the furniture shop to shoot in that avenue. That avenue is a very important avenue in the city. So when we block it, we were disrupting the city. So there was a problem.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you have a very complicated choreography of that involves people beating other people. So that means that you have to be very careful because you don't want to hurt people. So we have to do endless research and rehearsals in football fields of with the stunts and the martial arts experts in order to choreograph everything. So it would have the realism of the images that are recorded of the original event, but at the same time make it safe for thousands of extras. So that was kind of logistically a bit complicated. And then do it in one shot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And final thing, it's been 5 years since Gravity. Please tell us it's not going to be another 5 years until the next thing.
Probably it's going to be another 5 years before the next thing. I think it's more or less a pattern that I've been following.
Yeah.
And probably when my kids grow up, I'll do films more often.
Right.
But that's another full-time job, man.
And is there a film in England versus Mexico football matches?
England versus Mexico?
Yeah, there's a drama in that, isn't there?
They both lose.
Yeah, fair play. Fair play. Yeah. Alfonso Cuarón, thank you very much. Thank you.
That was Alfonso Cuarón, and time now for the review section. Let's start with the big hit at the US box office this week. Actually, we got two big hits at the US box office this week, both opening this week. It is, of course, a sequel to Wreck-It Ralph. It is Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Yes.
Hell's Bells.
Yes, so this story, we kind of start off where we kind of left them. So Ralph and Vanellope are best buds, obviously voiced by John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman again. And everything is going really well. Ralph is completely happy with life as it is. Vanellope, though, is getting a little bit bored of the same old grind. She can win her game really easily now. She's got her glitch under control. So she's a bit like, well, you know, life is a bit lacking in challenge for her. But things get more complicated when, due to an unfortunate series of events involving her need for independence, her game is broken. And she faces basically the game being sold off and Ralph being separated forever from his friend. So they basically set out to get the missing part they need to replace her console. So they need a new steering wheel for the console. And that means going to the internet, to eBay, to buy this console part. and get it ordered and sent back in the real world so that she will be able to continue surviving, basically. So it's basically an adventure on the internet with Ralph and Vanellope getting into all sorts of scrapes and discovering how things work out there.
So this is full on meta, right? There's loads of in-jokes and references and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and some of them are brilliant and some of them are really weird and kind of too much. So you've got, you know, the side of the internet is this huge city and there's like giant towers called Google and Amazon and things like that. And then you've also got, you know, the kind of slums of the dark web where there are viruses and malware and that kind of stuff. And there's also a sort of giant Disney castle, which is full of the most in-your-face product placement I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was genuinely distracting from the movie. I like all of these films, and yet I find it too much. Like, it was crazy. But, you know, there's lots of cleverness here, lots to love. It's in some ways similar to the Emoji Movie and the whole, you know, traipsing through the internet
but
thing.
But in a nice way.
But in a much,
not,
much
better... Not in that way.
Yeah, it's much, much better done than that. And the whole thing that they've hyped up with the Disney princesses is actually very well done. Mm. They're really good.
How did they get them all in the same room at the same time?
It's magic, isn't it?
I love that it's actually the voices of all the Disney princesses as well.
Yeah. Although they didn't bring Giselle back, so I did miss Amy Adams. That was a shame.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really, really good work on the Disney princesses. That stuff was all great.
The one and only wickedly talented Adele Dazeem is back in this one.
Exactly, yeah, right. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So really, really good stuff. They even got there's Vanellope, you know, is wondering if she's a princess because she doesn't have a song. So there's a whole thing about that. It's great. And you've also got Gal Gadot's character, who's in a racing game, like a much harder edged sort of Grand Theft Auto style racing game,
MMO type, brutal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she plays a character called Shank, who is instantly one of the coolest characters of the year. She's really, really good. So there's lots to love about it.
Shank.
I liked it. I didn't probably love it.
Uh-huh.
I can't quite put my finger on what was missing for me, but I feel like it's quite clever, but it doesn't always have the heart that I think the best Disney movies and to some extent the original had. So I liked it, but...
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not, like, you know, a lot of these, you know, me and Disney Animation and stuff, I'll go and see it more than once. This one, I'm like, okay, well, I've seen it, that's fine.
I really liked this. But more than, not only really liked it, it made me like the first film significantly more than I did as well. So my issue with Wreck-It Ralph was always that it's a video game movie that never, I thought, really takes advantage of its premise. Like, it becomes more about racing and sweets and stuff, and with a very loose Mario Kart theme to it. But it didn't, to me, really seize onto the potential of that idea. And I think this one absolutely does, but not on video games, but on the internet. And it completely throws itself into its concept, and it embraces it, and there's references upon references. I loved all the Disney stuff. Obviously, it's supposed to be a Disney fan site. It's incredibly over the top with everything from Star Wars to Disney princesses to a Stan Lee cameo. I mean, I thought it was fantastic. I loved the princess's slumber party. Each one of them has an awesome, like, self-referential t-shirt with a slogan on it. I thought it was great. I think I really, really enjoyed this film until the end, which is not bad at all.
When everyone dies.
Yes, when everyone dies in a horrible... I mean, yeah, John Craven turns up. It gets really brutal.
John Craven breaks the internet.
It was unexpected.
Wearing his Craven the Hunter kill suit.
That's what happened. In fiction, people. The finale is fine, and it's good, but it doesn't have the sort of joie de vivre that the one in Wreck-It Ralph has, like with the race. Like, you really get into that. It really excites you, and I know this because I watched it the night before in preparation for this. And I think while this one does its concept more justice, its sort of final set piece felt more generic and a little bit bland. That said, I think this is really good. I would give this 4 stars. I would thoroughly recommend anyone go and see it. I think it's good. Also, great. It's much more Vanellope than Ralph-oriented this time around, which I'm quite welcomed.
Yeah, that always annoyed me about the first one. That was the era when any Disney film with a female lead was getting a neutral title like Tangled or Brave.
Mm.
And we were told, oh, well, that's because it's a two-hander, Tangled, you know, so it wouldn't be fair to call it Rapunzel. And it's like Wreck-It Ralph comes along and it's clearly a two-hander, but they're like, well, no, it's fine calling it Ralph. And so the same thing here. Oh, it's fine calling it Ralph. Anyway, but that's just me. Anyway, I would be more of a 3 on this, but you know, I do think it's good and there's loads of good stuff in it, but I just didn't have the instant visceral love for it that I have for some other films. Spider-Man.
Helen Rex, Wreck-It Ralph.
You say 3 stars for Ralph Breaks the Internet, and weirdly enough, so does Empire Magazine.
Ooh.
3 stars then for Ralph Breaks the Internet. Next up, we have the number 2 film in the US this week. It broke all kinds of records for a live-action film in the Thanksgiving weekend. It is Creed 2. the sequel to Creed, which of course was the sequel to Rocky Balboa, which was the sequel to Rocky V, which was the sequel to Rocky IV, which was the sequel to Rocky III.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Just wanted to ground people, give a bit of context to it. This is a return, of course, as Michael B. Jordan, as Adonis Donnie Creed, the son of the late, great Apollo Creed, re-teaming once again with Sly Stallone as Rocky Balboa. But uh-oh, what's this on the horizon? What's that coming over the hill? Is it a monster? It is a monster. It's Ivan Drago and his son Victor, and they want to pummel things. Jimbo.
Yeah, that is, this is another film I really enjoyed this week. I had a good week at the cinema.
You saw two films.
I saw two films, and I liked them both.
You get a little badge.
I do. So yes, this is the spiritual successor to, in fact, and thematic successor to Rocky IV, and it sees Ivan Drago return with his son, played by Florian Big Nasty Montiano.
Yes.
Never has a man been more appropriately named, as he is a man mountain.
Walk around him, boys.
Indeed that. And it follows a fairly standard boxing format. There's fights, there's wins, there's losses, there's an up, there's a down. Lots of stuff happens. But this is an interesting one. I think, like, Rocky IV is not the best Rocky film, but it is many people's favourite Rocky film. It's not. Don't pull that face. It is not the best Rocky film, but it is. It's loads of fun. And I love that this picks up on that. And I think people will probably fall into two camps in this film. There are people who don't like it because it's not Creed 2. And people who do like it because it is Rocky 8.
I'm going to take exception with that immediately.
What, because it's literally Creed 2?
Not only is it literally Creed 2, it is Creed 2.
No.
This is tonally far closer to Creed than Rocky 4.
I think it falls somewhere in the middle. I think the thing with this is it feels much more traditional. There aren't a great deal of layers to the characterization. It's quite on the nose in every possible sense. There's a lot of heart to it, but there's not a lot of substance. But I really enjoyed it as a boxing movie. I thought it was really fun. I was absolutely swept along by it. But it doesn't have a lot of the subtext that Creed does. I also think that while Sylvester Stallone is fantastic again as Rocky, he doesn't have anywhere near as much to do. He doesn't have the emotional heavy lifting that he had in the previous film. I think Tessa Thompson is largely sidelined in this as well. That said, I really enjoyed the Ivan Victor Drago stuff. And there's another surprise appearance in here, which I won't spoil on the podcast. But that...
Oh, yeah.
Dynamic.
Yeah, the robot butler.
It was the robot butler. Wreck-It Ralph turns up. That dynamic between them and how they interact with Adonis and Rocky, I thought was absolutely fascinating. And yeah, really, really enjoyed this film. But I do think, you know, if people enjoy Rocky films, they'll enjoy this film. But if you don't like Rocky films, but you enjoyed Creed for other reasons, this might not strike the chords you wanted to.
I completely disagree with that.
And that's fine. You're entitled to be wrong. We live in a democracy, for this, now, at least.
This is a sequel to Creed, spiritually and tonally and visually.
And literally.
The colour palette is the Creed colour palette. The soundtrack is very much in the Creed world as well. What this does is it takes Rocky IV, which was a cartoon, and it takes those characters who, by the time of Rocky IV, had become caricatures. And Ivan Drago is nothing more. He is a two-dimensional supervillain in that movie. And what this movie does, and I think the actual, maybe taking Rocky V aside, but I think the beauty of Rocky Balboa, Creed, and Creed II is that it has enriched and deepened these characters, in particular Sly Stallone as Rocky Balboa. In this movie, does the same with Ivan Drago to an extent. Humanizes him in a way that Rocky IV just didn't.
It does. Yeah, he has no character in Rocky IV. He has no lines in Rocky IV. Really.
Precisely. And yeah, there's something about the weight. This movie, I'll full disclosure, I loved it. I absolutely adored this movie. I adore Creed. Creed for me was maybe my number one, number two film of the year. It came out a couple of years ago. I think it's incredible. I have such affection for these characters. I think this is Creed's movie. I think this is Donnie's movie. I think he owns this franchise now, Michael B. Jordan. I think he's terrific in it. But there's something about Stallone as Rocky. And it's very sad that he took the Instagram this week to say that he thinks that this is essentially the last time he'll play Rocky Balboa. I hope that's not the case, because there's some magic, there's a weird chemistry that happens when he dons that hat, that he allows himself to be vulnerable emotionally in a way that he doesn't allow himself to be in any other film. And there's something about the way he can just put that character on like a cloak. This character that he has shepherded over 42 years. 42 years. That is incredible. And almost everything he did or said in this movie broke me emotionally. And there's loads of stuff in this film that I thought was really emotionally resonant. There's, you know, the threads obviously between Ivan and his son Victor, between Rocky and his son, and obviously Donnie and Apollo as well. There's this great unspoken thing going on there, obviously because it's a very one-way conversation. I adore this movie. I think it's conventional. Yes, perhaps more conventional than Creed is, but I think the new director, Stephen Caple Jr., does a damn good job. And I thought it was terrific, which is why I was a little bit surprised and disappointed to see we only gave it 3 stars. I think it's terrific.
Yeah, I thought, but I wouldn't give it 3. I'd probably have given this 4. Like I say, I don't think it's a subtle film. We do disagree on the, shall we say, the substance of this. I think it's more superficial by far than Creed.
We will get into this in our spoiler special.
I'm sure we will. But either way, I think we can both agree, people should go and see it.
People should go and see Creed 2. Stop what you're doing and go see Creed 2 right now. 3 stars then for Creed 2.
Stop what you're doing and go see it because it is a recommendation.
As we always say in the podcast, is a recommendation. And next week we'll review Roma and also Andy Serkis's Mowgli, which is also going to be on Netflix as well. How exciting. Because that's it. That is it for this week's Empire podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun, where we'll be joined by two directors. One, the aforementioned Andy Serkis, director of Mowgli. Which
apparently
be...
it's Mowgli.
Only according to Johnny.
Yeah.
I'm a Jungle Book kid. It's Mowgli. All right? Anyone want to fight me? Anyone want to fight me? You want to fight me? Sure. You want to step to me? Anyway, who else? Oh, yeah, Boots Riley. Boots Riley, director of the astonishing Sorry to Bother You. He'll be on the show as well.
You could say it'll be Boots on the Ground.
You could.
Well, I mean, he was on the ground anyway.
Luckily, this his first film is tremendous.
It's
because
really
otherwise
good.
You'd have to knock boots and...
Wait, no, that... What?
No.
Doesn't that mean something else?
Does it?
Hmm...
Until a auspicious occasion, until we meet again, it is goodbye from our three colleagues of such lethal cunning off to hang their Christmas trees with the naked Salmon Dean at the top of her tree. Goodbye, Helen O'Hara.
I would like to just say that is not the case. Like, can we please be honest here? Did you see they ran a marathon this week?
I did, yeah, with the shirts on.
Shirts on, finished hand in hand. It's
really? Didn't see that? Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
Very nice. You know, my sister loves Supernatural.
Yeah, because she's wise.
No, she's not. Goodbye from Nick Dissimulian.
Goodbye, I'm off to eat festive Twiglets. Now that I'm allowed.
That's goodbye from James Dyer.
Be good kids, because otherwise, Craven will get you.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to work on my screenplay for the Grotbags movie.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, it's a hagiography.
Oh no.
Because she's a hag.
No, we got it. We wish we didn't, but we got it.
You're a hack.
Seems a bit personal. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.